beginnen. Het is goed te zien dat er nog heel veel mensen zijn, want ik zie heel weinig open plekken. Dus dat is natuurlijk altijd wel gunstig. Ik heb natuurlijk weer een mega probleem. Hetzelfde probleem als wat Michel heeft. Ik kom hier met mijn hartstikke mooie HP laptop. I'm here with my HP laptop. Brand new. It's not going to work because of I only have this VGA adapter. And so I'm using Michael, his laptop now. So unfortunately, I don't have a demo. The good thing is I will finish on time. Otherwise, I might have run just like Michael over time and we would have less time to drink beer, which is unfortunately. Being a bit narcissistic, this is my favorite slide, of course. My name is Jaap Zelies. I'm an independent consultant. I'm based in the Netherlands. I used to be an Exchange Server MVP, but I'm now an Office Server and Services MVP. And I used to do all kinds of Exchange-related projects. And it depends a bit on the time of the year. Right now, I only do on-premises project, but there are two customers that are thinking about Office 365 and we're initiating these projects. Both customers have Exchange 2010 and a lot of customers are still running Exchange 2010. And all the white papers you see, all the blog posts explain how beautiful Exchange Hybrid is, and bloody hell, they are all based on Exchange 2016. And how many people are running Exchange 2016? We asked in Michael's session, or Michel's session, a few customers, but most customers are running Exchange 2010. The agenda for today, I'm going to talk a bit identities. I saw Michael's presentation about identity, so there's a small recap there. We are going to talk about Exchange Hybrid. What is it? What version do we use? How do we implement it? We're going to talk about decommissioning Exchange on premises. Now, there was a gentleman with a question. He was sitting here and unfortunately, was not you. Eh? No. He left. Yeah, there was another gentleman here. Should you decommission Exchange on premises in a hybrid scenario? And is it supported? And of course, we finished with a small summary. So we're going to talk about identities, and we have three types of identities. We have the cloud identities, we have the synced identities, and we have the federated identities. The cloud identities are, just as the name implies, identities that only live in the cloud, in Office 365, but it can be in any cloud. It can be in Google, it can be in Facebook, in your banking environment, whatever. These are all cloud identities. They are provisioned in the cloud, they are authenticated in the cloud, they are managed in the cloud. Everything is in the cloud. It has nothing to do with any on-premises software or hardware. No directory synchronization, no hybrid, just Office 365 in this example. The second one is the synced identity. And the synced identity also lives in the cloud, but it originates in the on-premise Active Directory. So the identity is synchronized from your on-premise Active Directory to Azure Active Directory. And there it's used for Office 365. It's a separate credential, but it uses the same username and same password as your on-premises identity. You can synchronize the account. Optional, you can synchronize the password to Office 365, so you have the same set of credentials. You need a directory synchronization solution for this. And for this directory synchronization, that's one of the requirements for building your hybrid scenario. But as Michael said in his presentation, and I did it in the past in the presentation for Microsoft, especially for hosts, because hosts have a multi-tenant Active Directory environment. You can build your own synchronization solution on PowerShell using this Base64 encryption. As long as you know what you're doing, you can build it yourself. But for straightforward environments, use the directory or Azure AD Connect solution. The last one is the federated identity, and the federated identity is based on the synced identity, so the identity is managed in the on-premise environment. It's synchronized to Office 365, but the authentication part is redirected or federated to your on-premises authentication. So in this one, the previous one, we have the account living in Azure Active Directory. You go to Office 365 and you are authenticated against domain controllers of Azure Active Directory. And in this one, the federated identity, you go to Office 365 and you are redirected to your ADFS server. You're authenticated against your on-premises Active Directory, and the sample token is returned back to Office 365 and you can continue to work. So the difference here is the way of authentication. The most important part here is the source of authority. And the source of authority is basically the question, where is the account managed? For the cloud identity, the account is managed in the cloud using PowerShell or the Office 365 portal. For this one, it's managed on premises. So everything you do, create, delete, move, change properties, or exchange related properties, everything is performed in your local Active Directory. And then it's replicated to Office 365. So if you have a directory synchronization solution and you want to change, for example, an email address of a user in the Office 365 portal, it will fail and you get a cryptic error message saying that the action is out of the user's right scope or something. Basically meaning you have to change the email address on premises, wait for application to happen, and your email address is changed. And this is important to realize when decommissioning your last Exchange server. We get back to this on my last two slides. So what exactly is Exchange Hybrid? Exchange Hybrid is a long-term coexistence scenario between your on-premise environment and Exchange Online. And it's supported from Exchange 2010 with Exchange Online 2013 and of course 2016. Exchange Hybrid is not really a migration tool, not like a cutover migration or a stage migration or a third-party migration tool. It's a long-term coexistence scenario between on-premise and online. Exchange Hybrid provides transparent connectivity between on-premise and online, and you get secure messaging between the two. You get automatic auto-discover between the two. So if your auto-discover is pointing to your on-premises environment and you already moved the mailbox to Exchange Online, then the auto-discover request will be automatically redirected to Office 365 and the information is returned. Free busy information is shared between the two, mail tips, out-of-office information. Basically, you create one virtual Exchange environment consisting of Exchange Online and Exchange On-Premise. Now, when we look at the Microsoft marketing slides, Microsoft says, okay, I have this existing Exchange 2010 environment, and I have Exchange 2016 between Exchange 2010 and Office 365. And I have the directory synchronization, and I can synchronize users, groups, contact information. We have secure mail flow, sharing, free busy, mail tips, archive, mailbox data via the mailbox replication service. It's all happening via Exchange 2016. Now, this is the Microsoft approach. But how does a typical Exchange environment at a customer look like? We have a domain controller, of course. We have Exchange servers 2010, maybe, but not so typical. We have two Exchange 2010 Edge Transport servers. We have a namespace webmail.contoso.com and autodiscover.contoso.com. Maybe you have a namespace like smtp.contoso.com. And everything has been working fine for 5 years or whatever. What challenges do I run into being a consultant at customer? Exchange 2010 is running fine, no problem. But Customer is still using TMG. Who is using TMG? Only two? It must be a difference in country, I guess. A lot of customers I run into are still using TMG. Or they are not using an edge transport server, but a third-party appliance for anti-spam purposes. Sometimes, government exchange is not accessible from the internet. So they have the exchange environment. It's of course fully accessible for internal clients, and for people working at home, they provide a Citrix solution. And from Citrix, they have an internal connection to the exchange server. Exchange is accessible for OAuth, but Outlook Anywhere is not enabled. And Exchange 2010 works fine with Outlook 2003, using public folder, free busy stuff, system folders. Just to name a few issues I run into, which can cause issues when you want to move to Office 365. And I was at a customer last year that did not have Exchange accessible from the internet. It was not published to the internet, but they want a hybrid scenario. I said, okay, you can build a hybrid scenario, but then you have to publish Exchange to the internet. That was out of the question. It's horrible. Yeah, deadlock. But wait, there is more. Security offices, privacy offices, network offices over my dead body. Then you have all the technical guys on one line going to Office 365, security officers, privacy officers. Ah, painful. So what are the requirements for Exchange Hybrid? You need a directory synchronization solution. And it's Azure AD Connect. Initially, there was an application called DirSync. DirSync was replaced by Azure AD Sync. Now we have Azure AD Connect. And every time new features are installed in the directory synchronization, and that goes in a fast, rapid rate. I wrote a blog post, I think, 6 weeks ago. Last weekend, I did a demo for this presentation, and I noticed, I don't know, four or five windows maybe, pop-up windows for new features in directory synchronization. But Azure AD Connect, this tool from Microsoft, preferably on a dedicated server, but you can install it on a domain controller. I typically recommend not doing that to keep all domain controllers identical and install it on a separate server. It needs to be Windows 2008 or higher, functional level 2003, so that's pretty basic. For password synchronization, you need some more features, but your best option actually is to use Windows 2012 R2. Another issue, you need an internet routable domain for your user principal name. If you have a UPN like contoso.com, and in Contoso everything works, but then it works fine. If you have an internal domain name and an internal UPN like contoso.local, you have to change your UPN to the external domain name. So Office 365 knows to redirect back to your on-premise environment. There's also a tool called IDFix, and IDFix is a small tool you run in your environment. It checks Active Directory for any potential issues, like the UPN I just mentioned, or strange characters in names, leading or trailing spaces in names, all kinds of issues that can cause issues with your directory synchronization. There's the link AD Connect prereq. You can use that link to check the entire list of requirements. So you have the Azure AD Connect server to your Exchange 2010 environment, and your users are synchronized to Office 365. And the only thing you need is this server to connect to Office 365 via port 443, this is a regular HTTPS port. It's just a wizard. You run the wizard, you finish the wizard, wait for replication to happen, typically less than a minute. And as Michael said, the replication interval is 30 minutes. Now, if you have password synchronization, the password synchronization will take place within 2 minutes. but typically the password is synchronized within 30 seconds. So if you change your password on-premise, it's synchronized almost immediately to Office 365. And at that point, when you log on to your Office 365 admin portal, you see the user accounts show up here in active users. When you go to the Exchange Admin Center, you see the users show up in as mail enabled or as a contact in your Office 365 environment. So there are no mailboxes yet, just users. So the next step is to go to Exchange Hybrid. And what is an Exchange Hybrid server? What's an Exchange Hybrid server? Dat is way too difficult, way too difficult. Ja, ik zie u al kijken, hij komt mijn kant op. What's a hybrid server? Should I move to the back?
The one that makes the link between the premise and the... facilities, routing, inner routing, VPC, coexistence between on-premise.
It's possible. The Exchange Hybrid server is an Exchange server where you run the hybrid configuration wizard. Okay. That's all. It can be any server. It's a server where you actually create the hybrid configuration. Does it have to be an Exchange 2016 server? Or Exchange 2013? Or Exchange 2010? Do you need an additional Exchange 20 hybrid server at all? That's licht voor de hand. My demo has two servers. One domain controller. Azure AD Connect is installed on the domain controller. And my only Exchange server is configured as a hybrid server. Because it's only a server when you run the hybrid configuration wizard. And the hybrid, Office 365 is only using your namespace, webmailcontoso.com and autodiscovercontoso.com. Actually, only autodiscovercontoso.com because it retrieves the other namespace directly from the Exchange server. So you can configure the hybrid configuration server with a dedicated namespace, but there's no need to. Install it? Yes, you can, depending on your performance requirements. But when adding an Exchange 2016 server to this scenario, basically you're halfway an Exchange migration from 2010 to 2016. It's not just add an Exchange 2016 server, but you add new Exchange 2016 servers to your Exchange organization. You're basically moving from Exchange 2010 to Exchange 2016, and all your clients have to access the Exchange 2016 servers and then back to mailboxes on Exchange 2010. So it's basically by installing an Exchange 2016 server, you are initiating a coexistence scenario between Exchange 2010 and Exchange 2016. So my recommendation would be in this scenario, to move first to 2016 and then to Office 365. Or use the existing 2010 servers, or maybe install an additional Exchange 2010 server. You can use a third scenario, or a third namespace here, hybrid.contoso.com. And it's pointing to this additional server. And you can use this server, for example, for the SMTP traffic between your environment and Office 365. So your connector will be created here and all mail flow will be routed through this server. You can also use this server as a migration endpoint. So all migration traffic from these mailboxes are routed through the additional server. So you can balance your workload between the servers. Yes.
So maybe you will come, but so for me, it's like the conclusion is just to
Yes.
Because otherwise you couldn't get a lot of asshole.
Yes. Yes. So,
because I have this issue of, if you run the hybrid, let's say you're in the 2010 only.
Yeah.
And you run the hybrid configuration with on your other server, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same hybrid configuration wizard? Is the wizard exactly the same if you run it on against the 2010 server than against?
The hybrid configuration wizard for 2013, 2016, it's a standalone application. As of that I mentioned, February, 2 months ago, the hardware configuration wizard is available as a new version, standalone downloadable application for Exchange 2010. So it's the same configuration wizard. In the past, you would initiate it from the Exchange Management Console. So you would add a new forest, which was the Office 365, and then initiate the hybrid configuration wizard, which was basically an old configuration wizard. But right now, it's a new application you download, you run it. It's the same as Exchange 2013 and Exchange 2016. It was released very recently, and it will be supported for quite some time, because Microsoft knows quite a lot of customers are still running on Exchange 2010. Of course, they prefer you to move to Exchange 2016, but that's not always feasible. So there's no need to install Exchange 2016 in your existing infrastructure, at least not at this point. Do you need additional Exchange 2016 servers? Maybe if you anticipate a lot of load, or if your current Exchange server are already under heavy load, then it can be useful to add another server. Yes.
What if it's like I'm just trying to, when do I make that decision? Do I stay on 20? Let's say I have a large environment and I'm going to be in the hybrid mode for a long time.
Yes.
Is it that beneficial to go to 2016 or how is
it? Was out of mainstream support last year, so it will be supported for at least 4 or 5 years. Suppose you have 2,000 mailboxes on Exchange 2010, and you anticipate to move 1,500 to Exchange Online and keep 500 on premises. Now you can move all, migrate all 2,000 mailboxes to 2016, and do another move to Exchange Online. Or move them to Exchange Online first, keep the Exchange server, and then migrate it to 2016. Which is less work. And if you wait for another 6 months or so, you can run Exchange 2016 on Windows Server 2016. When it's officially supported. It will run though. I tried it. They asked me if I would was trying to change the time vacuum stuff. I don't know. What. Yes.
But would you recommend to
No, not yet.
Because I've had some issues with write back properties.
That's a part I haven't tried yet. Any MVP in the back? Okay. Michelle? No? I'm sorry, I can't answer your question right now, but that's a scenario I haven't looked at yet. That's a good, yeah, he's running around with the camera, so we can ask him when he returns. The hybrid configuration, where do you find it? When you log on to the Exchange Online Admin Center, you select hybrid, click on configure, it starts to download and you run the wizard. So you select the proper Exchange 2010 server, then you enable the federation trust between Exchange on-premise and Exchange Online. You have to create a TXT record in public DNS for verification purposes. You configure the client access and mailbox server. Now, in my demo, it was only one server, multi-role. You select the proper certificate. and wait for the configuration to finish, which is 5 minutes. The only difficult part might be the TXT proof record, because you have to enter the TXT record in public DNS, wait for application to happen. Now, if you can access the DNS yourself and you have a low TTL, then you can continue within a couple of minutes. But yeah, if you have bad luck, then you have to wait for a couple of hours. So when running the wizard, this is taken from Exchange 2010, and it's the new hybrid configuration wizard. So it will automatically detect my only one server. I enable the Federation Trust. This is the TXT record. Luckily, you can copy it to the clipboard and then to DNS. Once it's in DNS, you select the I have created TXT record, checkbox, verify domain ownership, and it's going to configure my hybrid Exchange 2010 environment. It gives this, it's not really a warning message because it's not red. There's an exclamation mark. It says, the auto discover record is not correct, but everything is working fine and I can't find any issues. So I have to do some more research on this. But then you have your Exchange hybrid up and running. So what is created in Exchange or in Active Directory on premises? Your hybrid configuration object is created in Active Directory. So if you have multiple Exchange servers, they all know, okay, we have this hybrid configuration and that's the way to go. There's a new accepted domain created in your local environment. There's a new email address policy created, contoso.mail.onmicrosoft.com. The domains in Microsoft Online are created as remote domains in your Exchange 2010 environment, and a new send connector and a new receive connector is created on your on-premises server. All on one server. So do you need a hybrid server? No, you don't. You can just use one server. If you have two servers, multi-role servers, it may be configured in a database availability group, and there is sufficient performance left, you can just run it on your existing two or one of the two servers. It will configure it automatically. What other requirements do you see? It's, for example, I mentioned the TMG. And Microsoft has a wiki page available explaining how to configure the firewall rules in TMG for use with Office 365. Another one is that customers say, I don't want people to access my Exchange servers. But for a hybrid, Microsoft needs to have access to your environment. So you have to open your firewall for the Microsoft environment. And Microsoft is publishing a list of all IP addresses used by Office 365. You can enter them manually in TMP, but Microsoft also provides an XML file with all the IP addresses used by Microsoft. And one of my customers is able to import the XML file directly in the firewall module of the F5. And it's here, it's separated in all products from Microsoft, including the IP addresses, etc. And you can use this list. But this list can be updated every day. So it's a bit tricky. If you want to do it manually, it's horrible. You can automate it if your firewall supports it. So that makes life a bit easier. Decommissioning Exchange. That's a question you hear a lot. Can I decommission my Exchange server? And it goes back to my first slide about the synced identity and the source of authority. So after you moved all mailboxes and public folders to Office 365, why do you need an on-premises Exchange server? For management purposes. The source of authority is still on-premises. All changes are made on-premises, both Active Directory and email related properties, so the exchange properties, and these are replicated back to Office 365. So if you decommission your exchange server, how do you change, for example, your email addresses? Or how do you set the hide from address book option? Now you can use apt-get to change a proxy address in your local Active Directory, and it will be replicated. It can be done. It's not recommended. It's not supported. The hide from address book, for example, so far I haven't been able to do it using apt-get. So you need an exchange server on premises for setting all your exchange properties. Suppose you decommission your exchange server and you want to add an archive mailbox in Office 365. Now on your local exchange server, that would not be an issue. Just enable the archive mailbox, but using apt-get might be tricky. Not supported, not recommended. So the recommendation here is to keep one Exchange server on premises. And like as one of the Microsoft program managers said, unless you want to get rid of all your servers, including your identity management, so you end up with the cloud identities. But at this point, an upgrade from Exchange 2010 to Exchange 2016 is easy because most of your mailboxes are gone, moved to Office 365. And if you have no mailboxes at all on your on-premises server, you can use the hybrid license for your Exchange server. There's no need for high effect. Yeah. It's the free license. There are a bit do's and don'ts, but when you go to this knowledge base article, you see exactly when or when not to use the free Exchange license. When you have only this server, one server left for management purposes, there's no need for high availability. There's not even a need to configure it as a hybrid server. Just have an Exchange server to set the required attributes. If you have configured it as a hybrid server, you still have an offboarding solution. Suppose you decommission your Exchange servers. You only have Exchange Online. And at one point, you want to move mailboxes back from Office 365 to on-premise. You have to start all over again. If you have just one server, your basic infrastructure is on-premises available for offboarding purposes. So, as a summary for my presentation, Exchange 2010 can still be used in a hybrid scenario, and there is no need to install an Exchange 2013 or Exchange 2016 server being a hybrid server. And it will increase complexity a lot if you do, because you're already halfway a coexistence scenario. Exchange Hybrid is using directory synchronization, is therefore using the linked identities or the federated identities, and the source of authority is still on premises. And this is where all changes to the accounts are made. They are not made in the admin center, Microsoft Admin Center, they are made on premises and then replicated back to Office 365. And therefore, you always need to have at least one on-premises Exchange server for management purpose. The bad thing is, there is still no Microsoft Knowledge Base article or blog post article saying this is the way to go. And you say articles, you can use apt-get, or you can Active Directory users and computers, or you can do it this way, or you can do it that way. And then in the small letters you see, okay, it's not supported, it's not recommended, but basically you should not do it. Keep one server on premise. So that was basically your question 2 hours ago. Any more questions? Kijk al meteen twee. Yes.
Can you break the hybrid configuration and still keep the server for management?
Yes. Yeah, the hybrid configuration is not a requirement. Only the Exchange server for setting the required properties, and the properties will be replicated to Office. So there's no need.
Directory synchronization.
Yes, yes.
That last Exchange server that you keep for management purposes,
yes.
Do you leave any role active on it, or just the management
console? The management console and setting the email addresses, so the email address policy that you don't need. In Exchange 2016, you only have a mailbox server role, but it's not a requirement to have a mailbox database, for example. Yeah, but you have only mail flow if there are still mailboxes on premises. If you moved everything to the cloud, then you only need the management server.
Can you use it as a relay server or pickup server?
Yeah, that's a good one. A lot of people are using their Exchange servers for relaying purposes. For example, when you have multifunctional devices, like printers or scanners or whatever, and they relay their messages through the Exchange server. And then you need a connector SMTP mail flow from the on-premises Exchange server to Office 365. Yes?
So there's no need for that, for that mail relaying, so you just have your one Exchange server, you get rid of your Edge servers, you get rid of your publishing, the only thing that needs to stay in place is your AD Connect and your...
Yeah. Suppose you are migrating from Lotus Notes. You build an Active Directory, you install an Exchange server, plain, no configuration, you create your users, you create them as remote mailboxes, all the information is synchronized to Office 365, and you're done. No certificates, no stuff, nothing.
Would there be a standalone console for sync federations?
That would be nice.
Because we have a lot of
if they only
we have
would.
Sync federation, but we need to install tooling and data. We don't need that. We only need the administrative part.
An additional server role for your domain controller, for example.
Like that. Yeah.
That would be so nice. I haven't heard about it, but it would be nice. I'm pretty sure they know, the guys in Redmond do know as well.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be the perfect solution.
Yeah.
But I haven't. Achterin? These guys are participating in the UC architect, so they have internal information, inside information. True. Yeah, but you can build it in a Windows Server role. It's a bit overkill.
Yeah, which are not very overkill for the features that we use. Yeah. Well, the problem is that the current management tools of Exchange require a full-fledged Exchange server in order to operate. But if it were possible to have those management tools, some couple, that would be
actually. Yeah. More questions. You know, the more questions, the longer it takes for you to get some beer, you know. Yeah, that's because of my demo, which is not available, but...
Okay, good. More question about sizing. So, where we would like to build this cover service still pointing to the on-premise.
Yes.
And everything is in the cloud.
Yes.
So, you're facing all the time on the discovery direction. Let's say if you are looking to 100,000 plus employment,
mm-hmm.
how much service would you need to have on premise to serve your customers? Is that typically something which is not being documented properly?
So basically, your question is how much load is AutoDiscover generating for 100,000 users? Not much, but. Then I would change the AutoDiscover record.
For reasons, this is the conference.
What reason? There are no reasons.
Merging acquisitions. Where the redirection can be done to the other.
Yeah, okay. But yeah, how much? You have 100,000 mailboxes. If everybody is online, you have 100,000 hits per hour. But it's only one hint, one reply. Yeah, I would say two services is sufficient. Yeah. It's the load will be very small, even with that number of users. Now, if you want to move 100,000 mailboxes at the same time, that would be a different question. I feel he is. There are more questions. I have to wait for a couple of more minutes. But yeah, more questions here. Yeah. Dan komt hij vanzelf los. More questions. This side, maybe. Yeah, come on. No. Okay. Okay. Well,
when you have one exchange server and 10 server with all the mailboxes.
Yes.
Do you need to add another server for performance reasons to do the migrations? And when do we need one?
Well, when you are going to move the mailboxes, it will add an additional load on your only exchange server. Yes. So it might be interesting to take off this load from this server to another server. But when you have only one exchange server with, for example, 250 mailboxes, and you plan to move mailboxes over a period of 6 weeks, then there's no real need, most unless your server is already capping at 95%. But then you'd be worried anyway, I guess. Ik zei het toch.
How do you see the role of the on-premise service continuing in the future?
How do I see the role or the... In a couple of years, every organization will have a tenant in Office 365. And that's my personal view of the world. So every organization will have a tenant in Office 365, and maybe they will do some stuff with Azure, or they will do some testing with Office 365 mailboxes. Maybe they will create a hybrid scenario, but there will always be Exchange servers on premises for at least the next 10 years. I don't see 100% of the population move to the cloud.
Do you think Microsoft is also following that idea? You see a lot of features coming into the Exchange Online, which are...
They want to make it as attractive as possible.
That's why I'm saying,
yeah.
We're going to miss features on premise, which
yes.
only
yeah.
based.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm not sure if they're committed to keep the premise going.
They will, as long as there's demand, and will get money out of it, they will continue. But there will be a point where the too small and the revenue is getting less and less, and then there's a possibility they will kill it. But I...
taking more effort
also probably
but on-premise, it's a spin-off of Office 365, of Exchange Online.
Yeah, but I see them developing in two different versions.
The software you get on-premises in CU, it's exactly the same software, but it's not enabled.
Yeah, that's why I see more value created in Office 365 and more effort going into that. That's why I'm asking.
Yes, yes. And the reason that features are not available because of the complexity or the amount of hardware needed for this. No. But it will take years. Yeah. Still discussing with your colleagues about more questions? No? Okay. More questions here? Journal mailboxes. Can you repeat it, Quinn?
Well, now you can enable journaling, but the journal mailbox itself cannot be hosted on Exchange Online. Is that something that is pipeline?
Sure. I have no enig idee.
I'm guessing that the idea of Microsoft is that
tremendous amount of data.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that's one of those topics that I like.
Keep quiet. But there are still reasons to keep your Exchange on premise, and this might be one. Yeah. Just like the typical backup requirements. Nobody? Thanks for your time. Oh, wait.
I've got a customer who's got Exchange 7.7 migrated to Office 365 on Exchange Online. From Exchange 2007. Staged migration, so they're using ERC. Now he wants to get rid of Exchange 2007. So what precautions do we have to take?
It's just like this one. If you decommission the server, you have no way of managing your Exchange related properties anymore. So if you do, and I know customers who decommissioned it and are perfectly fine with using ATSI Edit, but for management purposes, it's not a good idea. It is a good idea to upgrade.
In that scenario, when you have Exchange 2007 on premises, then that's one of the key requirements to get the free hybrid license. So you can install the most recent Exchange version, which is 2016. So you could use that. So you have a management Exchange server, which you don't have to pay for, at least for the Exchange server license, but you do have to pay for the Windows 3 license. So that could be and that solves this issue, or issue with the management. And support
I feel like one of the auction shows on TV. 25. Yes, here's my hammer. Question? No. Bang. Thank you very much.